There is a detail in this case that still catches me off guard. No matter how many times I walk through the timeline, on the morning of December 4th, 2024, a gunman stood outside the New York Hilton Midtown Hotel in Manhattan and waited. He had arrived at 6:39 a.m. He was not pacing. He was not hiding. According to surveillance footage reviewed during pretrial proceedings, he stood there, calm, and made a phone call. 6 minutes later, Brian Thompson, the 50-year-old chief executive officer of United Healthcare, crossed the street from his hotel and walked directly toward him. What the surveillance footage captured next was not a robbery, not a dispute, not a crime of opportunity. It was a shooting, described by federal prosecutors as a premeditated execution. The shooter fired from behind, striking Thompson in the back and the leg. When Thompson fell to the ground, according to surveillance footage presented in court, the shooter approached and fired again. By 7:12 a.m., Brian Thompson was dead at Mount Sinai West. The shooter disappeared into Central Park on an electric bicycle, and the detail that investigators would not be able to ignore, the one that would thread through every layer of this case, was already embedded in the bullets left on that sidewalk. Police reported that the words delay, deny, and depose had been inscribed on the ammunition. That phrase, borrowed from the language used to describe how insurance companies handle claims, told investigators this was not random. This was a statement. I want to be precise about what we know and what the record confirms, because this case has generated more public opinion than almost any criminal prosecution in recent memory. Luigi Nicholas Mangione, 27 years old, a graduate of the University of Pennsylvania, was charged in connection with the killing of Brian Thompson. Federal prosecutors from the Southern District of New York alleged in their charging complaint that Mangione had spent months planning the attack, that he had tracked Thompson's whereabouts, and that he had traveled to New York specifically because Thompson was scheduled to attend United Healthcare's annual investor conference at the Hilton. The Justice Department stated publicly that Mangione had targeted the victim, not for personal grievance in any conventional sense, but because of Thompson's position as CEO of a health insurance company, and that the killing was carried out, in the words of then-acting U.S. Attorney Edward Y. Kim, in a grossly misguided attempt to broadcast Mangione's views across the country. Mangione has pleaded not guilty to all charges at both the state and federal levels. The record is clear on that point, and I want to keep that distinction sharp throughout everything that follows. What investigators could not immediately answer was how a man with Mangione's profile had executed a targeted killing of a high-profile executive in broad daylight in Midtown Manhattan, disappeared into Central Park, and then evaded one of the most intensive manhunts New York had seen in years. For 5 days, law enforcement had surveillance images, a physical description, and a nickname the press had given the suspect. What they did not have was a name. That gap, those 5 days between the shooting and the arrest, is where the mystery of this case lives, and it would not be answered by forensics or phone records in the first hours. It would be answered, ultimately, by a McDonald's. On December 9, 2024, police in Altoona, Pennsylvania, approximately 230 miles west of Manhattan, received a 911 call. The manager of a McDonald's told the dispatcher that customers inside the restaurant were alarmed by another customer who, in the manager's words, looks like the CEO shooter from New York. Officers responded and found a young man eating breakfast who told the responding officer he was homeless. Body camera footage captured during pre-trial hearings showed Mangione appearing, in the words of one officer's testimony, nervous. That encounter, initially low-key by any measure, ended his 5-day run. When officers secured Mangione and searched his backpack at the police station, the contents were documented in a search warrant inventory receipt, authorized by an Altoona supervisor and listing more than 24 items. Among them, a 9mm ghost gun, which is an untraceable firearm with no serial number, with a homemade suppressor, a red notebook, handwritten notes, counterfeit identification documents, U.S. and foreign currency, a laptop, storage devices, and various personal items. A USB drive was found on a chain around his neck. A pocket knife and zip ties were also recovered. The firearm is the evidentiary center of this case. Prosecutors stated in court proceedings that the ghost gun recovered from the backpack is a ballistic match to shell casings, and a discharged bullet recovered from the sidewalk where Thompson was shot. The top portion of the weapon was a metal receiver for a Glock 9mm. The bottom portion, including the butt and trigger mechanism, had been 3D printed. A silencer and an extra ammunition clip were also found in the backpack. The significance of that weapon is not only forensic. Federal prosecutors charged Mangione specifically with the use of a silencer in a crime of violence, which placed the case inside a federal statutory framework that initially made the prosecution eligible for the death penalty. Let me restate the core of what the record shows. Prosecutors allege that a 3D printed ghost gun with a homemade suppressor recovered from a backpack belonging to Luigi Mangione 5 days after the Thompson killing produced a ballistic match to the evidence recovered at the scene of that killing. That is what the prosecution has claimed in open court. The defense has challenged the legality of how that backpack was searched, arguing in a 36-page suppression filing that Altoona officers lacked reasonable suspicion at the time of the initial seizure and that Mangione's rights were violated in the process. The judge presiding over the federal case ordered a hearing specifically to determine whether the backpack search was lawful. As of early 2026, the admissibility of key evidence remains a live legal question. The handwritten notes recovered from that backpack have generated as much attention as the weapon itself. A to-do list, dated December 5, 2024, the day after the shooting, began with a starred entry: buy black shoes, white stripe too distinctive. The second entry read: change hat, shoes, pluck eyebrows. A third entry included detailed travel directions, apparently involving bus routes to Penn Station. Investigators also reported finding a 3-page handwritten document discussing the healthcare sector and including the statement, "These parasites simply had it coming." These notes, according to multiple news organizations, citing law enforcement sources, were characterized by prosecutors as part of a to-do list and potential escape route documentation. The defense has disputed how these items were obtained and whether they can be used at trial. The legal architecture of the case is, by any measure, unusually complicated. Mangione faces charges in 3 separate jurisdictions. In New York State, he faces a count of second-degree murder and multiple weapons charges following the September 2025 dismissal of 2 terrorism-related charges by the presiding judge, who ruled them legally insufficient. The state trial was set to begin June 8, 2026. In federal court, Mangione faces a 4-count indictment, including interstate stalking and murder through use of a firearm with a silencer. On January 30, 2026, a federal judge ruled that Mangione cannot face the death penalty in his federal case, a decision rooted in whether the charged stalking offense legally qualifies as a crime of violence under the relevant statute. That ruling prompted significant legal debate about whether the government would appeal, which would further delay the federal trial timeline. Mangione then asked in March 2026 to postpone his federal trial from September 2026 to January 2027, arguing he could not be adequately prepared. Pennsylvania state charges remain pending as well. The scheduling conflict between the state and federal prosecutions has already produced open friction in court. The Manhattan District Attorney's Office argued that it had an agreement with federal prosecutors to proceed to trial first, an arrangement the DA's office said was violated when the federal court set a September trial date. The state judge overseeing Mangione's New York proceedings stated plainly that it appeared the federal government had gone back on their commitment to permit the state, who has conducted the majority of the work in this matter, to lead off. During that hearing, Mangione's outburst, as he was escorted from the courtroom in restraints, was reported by CNN. He said, "Same twice, plus one too. Jeopardy by any common sense definition." His attorney, Karen Friedman Agnifilo, argued that her client was being placed in an impossible situation due to this tug of war between two distinct prosecutorial offices, the double jeopardy question is real and significant. If the federal trial proceeds first and results in a conviction, it could render the state case irrelevant as a practical matter, which is precisely why state prosecutors insisted on going first. What this case ultimately asks, beyond the specific charges and the ballistic matches and the suppression hearings, is a question about the threshold at which publicly articulated grievance becomes something a legal system must treat as evidence of intent, and whether the system prosecuting this case is prepared to confront what the notes in that backpack actually said about why this killing, if Mangione is guilty as charged, was carried out. The evidence does not give us access to a verified motive in any legal sense. Prosecutors alleged a purpose. The defense contests the charges entirely. The record offers verified words on paper, verified ammunition markings, and a ballistic connection that has not yet been tested before a jury. What it does not offer is a clean answer to the question every listener is already asking. At what point did the people responsible for the systems that Mangione allegedly cited as his reason become part of the story that a jury will have to weigh?